I was told this morning that this is the most amount of riders that have ever finished a touring record. So I'm the person that has been most last in any Tour de France.
You're being too hard on yourself.
You can't get more last than me.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we're in Paris.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Daniel Freeb.
Hello.
Lionel's always in a good mood when you're around, Daniel.
Who isn't? Are you sure it's not because Mark Maddie has just appeared every shoulder?
Well, that's a very good segue into where are we, Lionel?
We're in Paris, capital city of France, near the Place de la Concorde and the Champs-Élysées up there. We're in the compound where the team buses have all parked up. It's the end of the Tour de France.
It's the end of the Tour de France. It's very unusual to see Daniel Freeb here, isn't it?
Yes. I was thinking earlier...
A bit of a Mario Cipollini, you, aren't you?
No, not really. Do you know who I saw the other day? Danilo Hondo. And I had an absolutely light bulb moment, a moment of genius. On the spot, I came up with a nickname for Danilo Hondo, Cipollini, because he did look like a cheap version of Mario Cipollini. Anyway.
He did, but unfortunately he's retired now. So, any more nicknames this Tour de France?
No.
The whimsical flaneur really took off with Warren Barguil, I feel.
Did it really take off?
Well, one or two people mentioned it.
There weren't many of those Warren Barguil kind of attacks where he looks as though he's going off the front of the peloton to pick dandelions, though, and make some kind of chain and
put sit it on in his a head. Field and then yeah. go roller skating with his girlfriend.
Yeah, they were lacking one. He didn't have a particularly good tour, did he?
He didn't. He had one... really outstanding performance into Bern, didn't he, in the service of his teammate John Degenkolb. But as you said, we are by the buses. We're waiting for the riders to arrive. They're not here yet, but all the team buses are parked up. And we're going to do something that we did last year, which was to stroll around the buses and give each team some kind of ranking, a wine glass ranking. Do you like your wine glass ranking?
That's trademarked by my Twitter feed.
Okay. Marks out of five for each team. Okay,
Why don't we give them a number of bidons for out of five for how well they've done?
Okay, well, let's start with, I think I can see Direct Energy there. Direct Energy, closest to the racetrack.
Daniel?
Well, they were prominent in the first week with a couple of decent sprints for Brian Coquard. Didn't manage to win anything. Sylvain Chavanel really confirmed that he is, dare we say, over the hill. And otherwise, they were fairly anonymous, but then they're quite a small budget team. Their budget is, I think, about 6 million, 5 million euros, which a lot of talk about budget in the last few days. Team Sky's is around 30 million euros, a bit more even. So, yeah, they've struggled to compete, really. But they've kept a reasonable account of themselves, haven't they? They've been fairly visible.
Age of 2R.
Well, how many bidons are we giving Direct Energy?
Two.
Oh, wow. Is that because of Brian Coquard's sprint where he was very, very close to winning but not quite in front?
It was the one that Marcel Kittel won. I can't remember where it was.
He's uphill.
Angers.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's the red, white and blue fly pass by the not red arrows, isn't it? Whatever the French equivalent of the red arrows is.
AG2R.
Well, Romain Bardet is on the podium, second... best French result since second.
AG2R, Jean-Christophe Parot 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. But this feels totally different, doesn't it? Because this is a rider who's at the beginning, really, of a journey towards challenging, perhaps, for a yellow jersey in Paris, whereas Parot was right at the end of his career, really, wasn't he?
AG2R, how do they do it, Daniel? I mean, they were not a great team for many years, and they relied heavily on foreign talent, as we explained in one of our Kilometre Zeros. But the last few years, they've really become a very well-organised team. In fact, when I spoke to somebody from the team, they pointed to the feeder team that they've got as being a really key element in their turnaround.
Yeah, I think they've been the benefactors of a very good generation of young French riders. We've spoken about before, and I've spoken in the last few days about the British success on French radio, and I talked about the emulation, this kind of factor of emulation between the riders. One does well, then the others raise their game, and it's like this kind of internal competition within a nationality or within a team. And I think Pinot doing extremely well, and Barguil, and they're all the same generation, and they all had a lot of success under 23 level. A gentleman standing a few yards away is actually responsible for some of why this generation of French riders has been very successful. Fred Grapp, the FDJ coach, he has been a big proponent of introducing things like SRM meters at very young level, so riders right from when they're 14-15 are training essentially a bit like professionals are training. So when they arrive in the pro ranks, they're already very well versed in modern training methods, etc. And the French have really been in the vanguard of that over the last few years, which is in stark contrast to the previous generation.
So bidons for AG2R?
4.5 out of 5. This is, we're going to have to speed this up. We're going to have to up the cadence. Otherwise,
okay.
We'll be here.
Okay, then. Okay, we'll up the cadence. Okay, Cofidis, 1 bidon. Orica
no,
Green.
No, Cofidis, no bidons. Okay. No bidons. They've been all.
Oh, that's harsh, harsh.
I think Christophe Laporte is an emerging star of sprinting, and he's not really a sprinter, shouldn't be a sprinter. Nasser Bouhanni was ruled out of the Tour de France on the eve of the race. Christophe Laporte found himself having to sprint, and he did a damn good job. He had a couple of top tens and looked very good.
They had their head cut off on the eve of the tour, so we'll give them 1 bead on. Orica Bike Exchange, I almost said Orica Green Edge, but Orica Bike Exchange, well, another great Grand Tour for them. They've ridden somebody into fourth overall. They've got a jersey, the white jersey, thanks to Adam Yates, and a sage one, thanks to Michael Matthews. Can't really argue with that. You know, they're having a fantastic season. We said it the other day, Paris-Roubaix, a fantastic Giro with Esteban Chavez, and a great tour. So I think 4 bidons for Orica Bike Exchange.
At least, I'd say there, yeah.
Giant Alpecin.
Well, Tom Dumoulin won the first time trial. Came very close to winning the second time trial. One in Andorra, of course, in the rain, which was one of the outstanding results of the entire tour. John Degenkolb continued to battle back from his horrific injury. A pretty good tour. I'd say they played to par, really, there.
Three bidons.
Two stage wins, and they played to par.
Given the season they've had, and I think they've had a good. I think 3.5 bidons.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I mean, Dumoulin raised expectation perhaps by his.
Well, Barguil was a bit disappointing. So they lose a bidon or half a bidon for that.
Can we give them dandelions instead? Can we give them 3 dandelions?
3 dandelions for a Giant Alpecin. FDJ.
Well, they've really struggled because Thibaut Pinot was ill and pulled out of the race in the Pyrenees or just off the Pyrenees. Sebastian Reichenbach he was brought to this Tour de France as a domestique for Thibaut Pinot. He's really ridden exceptionally well. I think he's finished 14th on general classification. Has looked like he's going to be a real asset for Pinot in the coming years. However, they expected and wanted much more from this Tour de France. Didn't have any kind of plan B apart from Reichenbach, no sprinter. So they certainly had one of their legs and probably more cut off.
Let's move away from the crying baby.
How many
bidons? Yeah, I'm just moving away from the crying baby.
One, unfortunately.
Oh, dear. Lamprey Merida. Louis Menkes rode very well into, I think, is he 6th overall, 7th overall?
There's Chiro
as well. How many bidons for Chiro?
Well, let's get him over. Lamprey, Mikey's really surprised me. Extremely good performance by him. Almost a sort of a diet version of Adam Yates' performance. Almost as good, climbed brilliantly, held his own in the time trials. Looks like, we already knew that he was a real prospect. Another note, I've mentioned him before, at Lamprey, the first Ethiopian to ride the Tour de France. I keep going on about him, Scarbu Grame, finished it with broken ribs, so well done to him.
Yeah, Menkes was 8th, not 6th. And Rui Costa was very active as well. Very aggressive. So should we give them, I think, given their budget, given the expectations, probably 4 bidons.
Well, the next team bus is Astana, and we've been joined by Ciro Scognamiglio, and it seems only right, Ciro. We're awarding each team an analysis of their performance and giving them a number of bidons out of 5.
Yes, about Astana. Well, not really a successful tour for Astana, I guess. They won the last two Grand Tours in a row, the Vuelta last year with Fabio Aru and the Giro of this year with Vincenzo Nibali. But certainly this year hasn't been successful because certainly Aru, I mean, could target a place in the top five at least. But after the performance of yesterday, he was out of the top 10. And Nibali tried to win a stage, but I mean, he was not able to do so. Not really positive for them.
What about you, Ciro? How's your tour been out five?
Not really positive, dear Daniel. You should know this. And yes, for our listeners, we could be considered maybe the happiest man of the world because we are here in the Place de la Concorde with the Tour Eiffel in front of us. It should be marvelous. But Richard, you know me very well, and you know that for me, this is not marvelous.
And, I mean, I must say, Paris is... the security is not unexpected, but a vast difference to previous years, isn't it? The amount of security we had to come through just to get here.
Well, for example, I have my hotel so near Place de la Concorde, but almost I was not able to enter in my hotel. Mm. Certainly, you know how I'm famous also in France.
Was that not to do with what happened there last year?
Maybe, could be. But in a certain way, the policeman didn't recognize me. So
what happened last year?
But about what? About the accident in Place de la Concorde or other things? No, I don't remember now.
I don't know. Maybe your nocturnal activities.
Maybe. I mean, maybe it's not a thing to say, I mean, for...
BMC. Who wants to... We're on to BMC.
I heard a rumour about BMC earlier. This might be well known. I don't know. I don't know what you've been saying on the podcast for the last 3 weeks. However, I think Nicholas Roach is joining BMC.
Well, we've been wrong in the past tipping riders to join BMC. Have they had a successful tour?
Well, they have. I think Richie Porte, his fifth place does not do his Tour de France justice. He lost time on the second day and has really climbed as well as anyone since then. And considering this is a guy whose best Grand Tour finish up until this tour was seventh in the first Grand Tour he ever did in the 2010 Giro d'Italia, I think it's a massive step forward for him at this point in his career. I'm not sure he's ever going to win a Tour de France, but... I was quite pleased for him, really.
He's ridden well, and let's not forget Greg Van Avermaet as well, had a stage win and a brief spell in the yellow jersey.
Yeah, so how many beat-ons? Are we going to give them 3.5? Would have been 4, but TJ Van Garderen...
I think 3.
3? Day in the yellow jersey? Yeah.
BMC, they've got the second biggest budget in cycling, the third biggest budget in cycling, according to L'Équipe.
Okay, yeah, I wish I'd seen the sort of metrics beforehand so I could, you know...
They're beside there, Fortuneo, Vital Concept, the team with the smallest budget at the Tour, 3.5 million euros. Ciro.
Yes, just to complete the analysis of BMC, just a word about Damiano Caruso, the Italian guy, was quite strong in the mountains. He helped Richie Porte and will be one of the five guys for the Olympics of Italy. Concerning Fortuneo, I must confess that I'm not really well prepared, listeners, about this stuff. It's a pity for you. Not for me, but maybe...
Well, they've got Dan McClay. Kind of Dan McClay rode very well, didn't he?
They've almost got an Italian name. Fortuneo, no? Still nothing? Mm. Ciro's looking at his phone.
How many bidons for Fortuneo?
I think 3. Par. No?
Yeah. Tinkoff.
Dominated by Peter Sagan, of course. It seems a long time ago now, but at the start of the race, there was a lot of talk of disunity in the camp because we know that Oleg Tinkov is pulling out at the end of the year, and it seemed as though everyone was pursuing their own agenda, not really working as they should for Alberto Contador, who, of course, crashed and pulled out of the race early. But everything has sorted itself out, hasn't it? And Sagan has really been a rallying point for the rest of the team. And Roman Kreuziger has ridden a decent race on general classification.
Let's not forget Rafał Majka and the King of the Mountains jersey as well. So they've won two of the major jerseys, and that's got to count as a success. I think you got to say 4 bidons. Have you not?
Considering they lost their leader, I think 5 bidons. 3 stage wins, spelling the yellow jersey, green jersey wrapped up, King of the Mountains wrapped up. And for about an hour and a half yesterday, Roman Kreuziger was second overall.
Can't argue with that. Katusha.
Why didn't you do this one, Richard?
Katusha, well, disappointing. I mean, a stage win with the owner Zakarin Rodriguez in his last year, rode up to decent overall placing. What was he, 9th? 7th in the end. He moved right up to 7th. That's a decent ride by him. and the Sage win was good, but Alexander Kristoff will be very disappointed. I mean, we're standing on Place de la Concorde waiting for the riders to appear. I think Kristoff has got a good chance today, a very good chance today. He normally gets stronger as the race goes on. He is a diesel. Much will depend on how Kittel is, but I think Kristoff could get that stage win today, which would maybe give him another half a beat on.
Yes, because so far till now, for the moment, Kristoff hasn't been the same rider that we saw in the past when he won San Remo, he won Flanders, he was a stage in the Tour. Not at this best level for in this Tour, no.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. We'll not do a pedal de charme today, partly because we have got such a backlog, and I've got a collection of t-shirts under my arm here to give to various riders today. We'll just have to take our chances, I think. Let's carry on, shall we, with the teams. But thank you to Eurosport for sponsoring Daily Pedaler de Charme. It's been great fun, and we've done a couple of Facebook Lives for them as well. That's been good fun too. Trek Segafredo. Well, you're a big Bauke Mollema fan, aren't you?
Is Giovanni Lombardi? Peter Sagan's agent? Oh, no, he's not going to have a word with us. Who are we talking about?
Trek Segafredo.
Well, Bauke Mollema was the real star of the race up until 2 days ago, certainly 3 days ago, when he suffered a nasty crash, didn't he, on the way to Saint-Gervais, fell out of contention on general classification, came back swinging yesterday on the final mountain stage to Morzine. But I think they have ridden a reasonable race. Cancellara should have been a bit more prominent, you would have said. And you know, they didn't have an awful lot of options when you look at the roster that they brought to this Tour de France. It wasn't even a particularly strong team to support Bauke Mollema. You got Peter Stettiner in there, who, of course, suffered an awful crash last year at the Tour of the Basque Country. Thrown into the Tour de France, did a very good job for Bauke Mollema. So limited resources at their disposal in this Tour, and I thought they did okay.
And Mollema was a very popular guy while he was up there in overall contention. He's never been in that position before, really. He was briefly in second overall in 2013, but he conducted himself very well and always spent time talking to the media, and no matter, you know, even the other day there where he had such awful luck, he was still very charming. They're building a hell of a roster for next year though, aren't they, Trek Segafredo? I mean, they're losing Cancellara and losing his salary, but really adding a lot of strength to that team, it looks like, for next year. But anyway, that's next year. Movistar.
How many bidons so for Trek Segafredo?
Oh, I think four. Movistar,
well, strange old tour for them, really. Came in with arguably the joint favourite, Nairo Quintana. He never really got going. Looked a little bit like he might do something on the Mont Ventoux stage, but then, well, had a bit of a shocker there, didn't he? And then there were rumours that either he was ill or suffering from allergies, and the attacks that we anticipated just never came. We'd all talked about how he deteriorates less than perhaps the others in the final week, and that he would go off like a rocket in the Alps, but was unable to do so, but did nevertheless manage to sneak onto the podium in third place. Alejandro Valverde, give him his due, he did support Quintana a couple of times. He tried to lift the pace and put Sky under a bit of pressure, but really he was one of the only guys to do so. And I think, to sum up their entire tour, there was some footage from the inside of the Movistar car from yesterday when Jon Izagirre won the stage in a very rainy Morzine, and they were punching the air and celebrating. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't celebrate a Tour stage win, but given they came into this race hoping to win the yellow jersey, it was a pretty slim consolation. So, and the suspicion that they've not really ridden for a clear objective means paltry 2.5 bidons.
All right. Daniel, some breaking news there on your phone.
Yeah, Tony Martin has quit the Tour de France. We're not sure what has happened there. You would imagine that he would have had to have crashed to quit the Tour midway through the last stage, but we'll find out more about that.
I am cycling.
Well, considering they're leaving the sport and all the riders are up in the air, it's a difficult tour for them. Their outstanding rider is Harlinson Pantano, who we gather is going to Trek Segafredo next year. Won a stage, was up the road several times in the final week, looked pretty good. Given that they are folding, given that they're not one of the most powerful teams, I think, you know, certainly a solid 3 bid-ons for them.
Bora Argon 18. I mean, they're a team that's stepping up next year, and I think we saw that certainly in the early part of the tour, very active in breakaways and so on. They had terrible luck as well, of course, Sam Bennett, their sprinter, crashing on the first day, and he's not been able to contest any sprints. He is going to finish the tour as Lantern Rouge. And so they've done not bad. I spoke to Paul Voss the other day, actually, one of their riders who was an early King of the Mountains, and he said that Ralph Denk, who runs the team, has not made any promises to any of those riders yet. They are stepping up next year. They're going to be a World Tour team. Rumours of Peter Sagan and others going there, but apparently Denk has not made any pledges to the riders about whether they're going to be part of the team or not. Quite a good strategy, perhaps, coming into the tour. I think a lot of them raised their game and rode pretty well, so you know they're riding for to be part of that much bigger setup next year. But I think three Bidons, because they are one of the lower budget teams, Bora Argon 18, Etix Quickstep,
yeah, they won a stage, didn't they? Julian Alaphilippe was very prominent throughout the race, rode very aggressively, really impressed me. I thought Dan Martin deserved better on GC. I think he's going to finish 10th or 9th. And I think he was one of the strongest climbers in the race. Didn't really time his attacks in the best way, and that probably cost him in terms of his position on general classification, but at least he had a go, and very promising for his future. I don't think he's going to win a Tour de France, but who knows, he might win a Giro d'Italia or a Vuelta a España. He's shown that he can stick it out for 3 weeks anyway.
I think he enjoyed being part of that overall mix. What? How many Bidons for Etix Quickstep?
Three.
Okay, Lotto Soudal. Well, Thomas de Gendt won the Mont Ventoux stage, the sort of showcase stage of the race, but it was very much overshadowed by what happened further down the mountain with Chris Froome losing his bike and taking to his feet. So de Gendt certainly did not get the credit that he deserved for that stage win. And also, very tragically, that night, of course, was the terrorist attack in Nice that obviously sort of overshadowed everything at the Tour de France. So de Gendt, that was a very good stage win, didn't get the real acknowledgement for that. Otherwise, André Greipel has been a bit disappointing in the sprint, so he's probably going to win today, with me having said that.
Well, he can't win if Christophe's going to win, and we've already said Christophe is going to win. Let's wait and see what happens there. Who's next?
Hang on, Lotto Soudal, number of Bidons.
Oh, Lotto Soudal, number of Bidons. Oh.
Three.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, if you're going to have to leave us, Daniel, then we'll let you do Team Sky.
Oh, they did okay, didn't they, I think. Three and a half?
3.5 for Team Sky. Bye, Daniel. Okay, bye, Daniel. See you soon. So 3.5 for Team Sky, did okay. Lotto Mumbo Jumbo.
Lotto Mumbo Jumbo. Well, given the remarkable results by Dutch riders this season, Wilco Kelderman really didn't follow in the footsteps of Tom Dumoulin, Bauke Mollema to an extent, did he? He had a pretty torrid tour. They didn't do an awful lot, did they? I mean, George Bennett got in a few breaks. I mean, Kelderman got in a break in the final week, I think. But
the young sprinter, Groenewegen.
Dylan Groenewegen.
Groenewegen. He showed, I thought, great promise. Also in Angers, that sprint up the sort of drag, he put in an amazing performance there. Kittel won the stage, but he was probably the fastest man over the last sort of 400 metres.
Well, maybe he'll win today on the Champs-Élysées.
Maybe he will.
Two Bidons for Lotto Jumbo.
Well, there is Dimension Data. I mean, I think five Bidons for them.
Absolutely.
Five stage wins, Steve Cummings, plus four for Mark Cavendish. Serge Pauls deserves a lot of credit, I think, for the way he's ridden. He has been up there on the attack. He was second on that stage to Mont Ventoux, to Thomas de Gendt, but he's been very active in the mountains and ridden extremely well. He's a rider who's gradually sort of improved over the last few years, and he has ridden extremely well. It's got to be five Bidons for Dimension Data.
Yeah, one of the teams of the race. I mean, yellow jersey, Cavendish was in green on and off. Cavendish's renaissance. Steve Cummings' win was one of the most entertaining of the race, just because of the manner in which he pulled it off. Yeah, terrific stuff.
Cannondale.
Oh dear, finally, Cannondale, Drapac. Well, it's been a real Western for them, hasn't it? A Western supermare, a nightmare. Pierre Hollande, their big hope for an overall high position, he had difficulty, didn't he? And never really got into his stride, crashed at some bad times. But in the final week, you cannot dispute the toughness of the guy, because he was down on the floor, really horrible looking crash on Friday. He was warming up on the rollers on Saturday morning before the stage, bandaged up quite heavily, and then he was off up the road again. And for a while, he was leading the race with, I think, Rui Costa. I forget which of the riders he was up the road with, but that has been more or less all they've had to talk about. The rest of the team hasn't really done a great deal. Alex Howes has got in a couple of breaks, but I'm really struggling to think of anything else they've done. And when you consider how well Joe Dombrowski rode in the final week of the Giro, getting in breaks and for a young guy, they didn't really have anyone doing that here.
Wrap this up quickly, Lionel, because look who's walking towards us.
Jonathan Vauters is walking towards us just in time to hear me give Cannondale Drapac one bid on.
Jonathan Vauters has spotted us. Hi, Jonathan. How are you? Thanks for your contribution to our Wine Kilometre Zero.
Oh, well, it's no problem whatsoever. I'm glad that you guys have such a fine appreciation of wine.
Well, we do now, having learned so much from the master. So what's on the agenda for you today, Jonathan?
Oh, I'm actually just taking Lawson Craddock's parents, fiancé, and Alex Howes' girlfriend up to the Tribune to watch their son finish the Tour de France for the first time.
And what's your verdict on the team?
Oh, I mean, we had a bit of a garbage Tour de France. You know, we came sort of with one card to play, and that was with Pierre, and we had a lot of faith in him, and it didn't pan out. So, you know, that's the way it went. You know, it's, you know, whatever. We got a great team for the Vuelta, and we got a great team.
What's your team for the Vuelta? Joe Dombrowski is going there, isn't he?
Yeah, Joe's gone. Andrew Talansky's going. Pierre's going to go. I think Lawson's going to go. It's a really strong, but we put a lot of eggs in the Giro basket because we really felt that Rigo had a genuine shot at the podium in the Giro. And because of that, we were a little bit thin for the Tour de France, and we kind of knew that going in, but those are, when you don't have a 35 million euro budget, those are the gambles that you take. You have to take your shot at one thing, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And we were a little bit thin to start with here, and the pins didn't quite fall the right direction. But, you know, that's sport.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Well, thanks for that, Jonathan Vauters.
Yeah, he's had a tough tour, I think. Pretty deflated. As he said, you know, all the eggs in Pierre Hollande's basket. We forgot, of course, he crashed in the early part of the tour.
When he staged the Luchon, he badly damaged his hand. And I mean, Vauters was telling us there when I switched the mic off that he said in 30 years of being a bike racer himself, following bike racing, managing a team, he's never seen somebody be so badly bashed up and yet be on the attack every day. And he pointed out Roland finished 16th overall, but he was very, it didn't stop him at all. And we had the story, of course, of Kayleigh Fretz told us that apparently, according to Alex Howes, told Kayleigh Fretz that Roland suspected his hand was broken but didn't want to get it x-rayed. Vauters told us there that he'd had it stitched up, had to have the stitches opened out again to have the hand examined.
Yeah, and then the wider issue, what Jonathan hinted at there, you know, the he's talking about the 35 million euro budget. That's a reference to Team Sky's reported budget. We don't know how accurate that is. I mean, they clearly have the greater spending power than the majority of the teams. We haven't got time to sort of get into this issue right here now on the final day of the Tour de France, but this is clearly something we're going to follow in the coming weeks and months. And looking at the way the sport is evolving and the disparity between the haves and the have-nots, and that, of course, is because professional cycling is entirely capitalist. If you can attract a sponsor who can put in tens of millions of euros as opposed to a sponsor that can put in 5 or 6, you've got a huge advantage. You can pay your riders more, you can invest more in infrastructure, you can have 9 washing machines on your laundry truck. And while at one end, you know, the bar is being pushed up, there are a lot of teams struggling to keep up. Jonathan did hint there that he's got perhaps a couple of decent signings lined up, and maybe because of sponsors pulling out, the transfer market might favour some of those smaller teams this winter, although deals are being done now, aren't they? But in the medium term, how is professional cycling going to look at this issue, and will there be a need for not necessarily a salary cap, but some kind of budget cap or a budget tax where, you know, you're allowed a budget of 15 million euros, for example, and then you have to pay into a pool a sort of a tax if you go over that. So incrementally it gets more expensive to spend huge money on riders or development because the playing field's just too uneven.
Fortes, of course, comes from the US, where there's a, weirdly, a very uncapitalistic sort of system of managing and running sport and sports teams and transfers and drafts and so on. Yeah, he did say that he seemed actually very excited about a couple of new signings, which he can't obviously reveal who they are yet, but he did hint that one of them would be a talismanic sort of figure, a bit like David Miller. And I think they've missed these guys who for so long were the sort of spine of the team, the backbone. Gave them a real presence, if nothing else, you know, and it could be relied upon for results, but they gave them a certain gravitas in the peloton, and they're really lacking that. And I think Uran and Roland will become those kind of riders for that team. But it takes time, doesn't it? And I think they do need a solution, and it sounds like he might think that he's got one, at least for the moment. Shall we leave it there, Lionel, and come back as the race, when the riders are here and the race is in the closing stages? While we wait for the men to arrive, Lionel, there's a lot of excitement from the commentator about next year's Grand Départ in Dusseldorf. The riders aren't far away, but we were here earlier today for the La Course, the women's race, third running of the women's race, in beautiful sunshine today. Lots of crashes.
There were lots of crashes, yeah, particularly in the last couple of laps. It was a case of trying to stay out of trouble first, and it was Chloe Hosking of the Wiggle High Five team, Australian rider, Australian sprinter, who took her second World Tour race victory of the season. She won the Tour of Chongming Island in China a couple of months ago in May, and I spoke to her after the finish. So you won a World Tour race in China a couple of months ago, but how does winning on the Champs-Élysées compare?
It's not comparable.
In what sense?
It's just something else. I've grown up watching, you know, the men race on this. I just saw Robbie McEwen up the road. He said congrats. I said I watched the videos. I learned from you. So, this is just something else. And, you know, my family's here. And winning in Europe is big. Winning in Paris is bigger.
Well, Robbie McEwen won on here twice. You're the first Australian winner since him. And you're the first non-Dutch winner to win La Course, so you've broken their stranglehold on this race.
Yeah, we're only 3 years in, so but you know, set history early. So it's a pretty nice honor roll to join with Marianne Vos and Anna van der Breggen. I'm pretty very happy.
So tell me about the race itself then, because there were some crashes in the last two laps. What were you doing to make sure you weren't caught up in those?
Yeah, I sort of went in with a really conservative race plan. I know how much energy you save just by sitting at the back, so I was at the back for most of the race, but then with four laps to go, that's when I started to move up, and I was sitting around 20 position, and with two laps to go, I was around 10 position, so then fortunately all the crashes were behind me, so I actually didn't see any. apparently all my teammates crashed. They're all fine, but you know, they did their job. They put me in the right position. Amy Peters was in a break with a lap to go, which put us in a perfect situation. Yeah, so I think that it was a combination of luck and just being in the right place. I didn't crash.
And lastly, what was the moment like when you knew you had it? You had a little bit of time to enjoy it before the line came, didn't you?
I was just sort of looking down and looking behind me and waiting for them to come, and I couldn't believe it. I don't know how much I won by, but I think it was convincing. So, yeah, I was just shocked, really. I was like, where are they? Like, because I started so early, I was sure they were going to come over me. But, yeah, I timed it right.
Yeah, there were a lot of stars. Marianne Vos was third, but not a lot of riders who are going on to the Rio Olympic Games. Lizzie Armstead was quite a late withdrawal. Ashley Moolman, the Americans who are hotly fancied for Rio, none of them were riding. Still a pretty strong field and a very big field as well. But it was a pretty spectacular occasion. You know, it was it looked great. The crowds were big, and it was good. But I spoke also to Danny King. I know you spoke to Brian Cooks, and you'll hear a lot more from La Course in the forthcoming Cycling Podcast Femina episode 3. That's coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, just one point on the crowds. The crowds were good. It's obviously held several hours before the men's race arrived, so it's a long old stint in a very hot sun for anyone who wants to stand on the barriers and watch both races and not lose their position. But a colleague of ours, Hannah Reynolds, who is editor of Cycling Active magazine, I believe still, she was making the point on Twitter that all of the VIP seats down on the Champs-Élysées next to the finish line were completely empty this afternoon, which is a crying shame. I know the security issues here in Paris. I mean, there are police vans on every junction leading away from where we are now. There are bag searches. There's a lot of security because of the heightened sense of worry after the attack in Nice and previous attacks in Paris. But to have the finish straight there, all the seats just yellow and empty while world-class riders are riding past, did seem a shame. And it would be good if in future they could work out a way to either sell VIP packages for the women's race so that those seats are occupied, or allow the public in and sit in those VIP seats for the afternoon race. If you then have to kick them out because the nosebaggers are coming in for the evening, then fine. But to have empty seats watching world-class sport is rubbish.
As we saw at the women's tour, you could fill them with school kids. I mean, the school kids were out in force at the women's tour in Britain. They absolutely loved it. It is a Sunday, so there might be issues there, but fill it with school kids. They would make a lot of noise and they would absolutely love it.
Absolutely, good suggestion. Yeah, I mean, a minor niggle, but as Brian Cookson said when I spoke to him, and we'll hear this full interview in the Cycling Podcast Femina, it's steady steps. Sustainable growth is far more preferable to a sort of boom bust scenario. And so, you know, this race already, the women's race, La Course, already feels like it's stepped on a lot from 2 years ago when Daniel and I were here, and there wasn't really a lot of awareness that it was going on. Marianne Vos won, and it was all a bit embarrassing because there wasn't many people here, certainly not many journalists had managed to get here in time. So it's really stepped up a lot already in a couple of years. Inside the final 5 kilometres of the Tour de France, then, Richard, been a very eventful afternoon for Etics Quickstep. Tony Martin started the stage but pulled out with knee pain. Dan Martin was off the back at one point, I think with a mechanical problem. And Marcel Kittel had to have a bike change and then realised that he had a soft tyre on his bike and was throwing things in the road. Patrick Lefebvre tweeted that it's been a terrible day for his team. Not entirely sure if Kittel is back up and in there at the moment, but the pace is on at the front, everyone all back together, 4K to go.
Yeah, normally nobody has dropped on the Champs-Élysées, but actually, well, as you say, Dan Martin's been battling to get back on, and one of the Fortuneo riders, sadly, is riding right in front of the Voiture Ballet, the broom wagon, so he's not had a memorable afternoon on the Champs-Élysées, but they're coming up to the, well, they're coming down the Champs-Élysées now before going out to the little loop, then up the Rue de Rivoli, and there's a crash, one of the I Am Cycling riders. Dear, oh dear. I mean, there were a lot of crashes, as we said earlier, in the women's race as well, and when I spoke to Danny King and asked her why, she said it was the roads are really rough, you know, really bumpy, and you've got the cobbles and the smooth sections, but she said that was the main reason for the crashes, and we've seen quite a heavy one there in the men's race as well.
And Chris Froome is riding quite far down the back, where the peloton is kind of, it's sort of in the tail of the peloton, really, isn't he? Where it's single file, and he's riding a bright yellow bike, not one of the Mavic service bikes, which he briefly rode on the way up to Chalet Reynard on Mont Ventoux. It's a Pinarello that's been painted yellow to celebrate his third Tour win.
One would assume so, Lionel.
Oh, Rich, that's sad to see. Brian Coquard, the Direct Energy sprinter, high hopes for a French win on the Champs-Élysées, standing in the road with his bike, presumably a puncture or mechanical problem.
And we're standing right by the Direct Energy bus, and there were a lot of groaning when that happened. Can't tell if there's a little split there, if a little group's clipped off front. No, maybe not. There's a little group's are coalesced at the front, and there's a, you know, a string of riders back to the main group. It's just so fast, isn't it? That's the issue. And I'm struggling to see which sprinters are up there. It's Cofidis, actually.
Yeah, Etics Quickstep are there. That's Lotto Soudal, isn't it? Etics Quickstep are there, so Kittel must still be in. Who's your money on them, Rich?
Well, Kittel looks pretty well placed up there, and a little group has actually clipped off the front. Kittel's team is massing at the front, which suggests that he's there. He's there in the German champion's jersey. And here they come past us now.
Did you not mean Greipel there?
Sorry, I meant Greipel and two Katusha riders there as well.
Well, Greipel is opening up his sprint now. Final 250 to go.
It's Greipel against Christoph, and I think Greipel's going to get it. He's got the speed here. There he is. Oh, no, here comes Sagan. That was close.
Wow. Close. Peter Sagan there just deciding to sprint right at the last minute.
Yeah, Christoph got a very good lead out. Edvald Boasenhagen up there too, so was Michael Matthews. Christoph got a very good lead out, but it just left him with a little bit too much to do, and he had Greipel on his wheel in the perfect place, and Greipel is the winner on the Champs-Élysées. He's come good finally.
2 years in a row for André Greipel. 4 years in a row for Germans on the Champs-Élysées. Marcel Kittel won the 2 years before that, and I think 4 years before that was Mark Cavendish. So Great Britain 4, Germany 4 on the Champs-Élysées.
Yeah, Isle of Man 4, Germany 4. Yeah, wow. I mean, it's funny, isn't it, with that side-on camera. It tends to just focus on one rider. And they've got a good track record of picking the right rider. And they were on Greipel there throughout the finishing straight. But Sagan, looking at the overhead shot, Sagan was coming up incredibly quickly, but just didn't quite time it right.
And just a minute or so after the sprint finished, there's the Sky team all in a line, Chris Froome in the middle, the whole Sky team crossing the line just off the back of the peloton as they did last year.
Yeah, I mean, no Richie Porte this year to have a little wobble when he takes his hands off the bars. But yeah, and it's a reminder that they finished with all nine riders as well, isn't it? Well, Lionel, sun is setting on Paris. I'm waiting here with you outside the Bora Argonne 18 team bus for the Lantern Rouge, Sam Bennett, who we've been kind of following since day one when he had a terrible crash, and he's done very well to finish his first tour. He rode last year, didn't finish. He's finished this year, and he actually managed a top 10 today on the final stage, which is excellent. Unfortunately, he's been called to dope control, so could be waiting here for some time. Not sure if we will see him after all. But I did speak to Geraint Thomas, Team Sky rider. I mistakenly thought that he'd been a member of every team that had won the Tour de France, Team Sky team. But of course, he missed 2012 because he was preparing for the London Olympics. So I spoke to him, and here's what he had to say. Geraint, getting used to this, done this a few times now. I think, apart from Froome, you're the only Team Sky rider who's been in the Tour winning team every time. Is that right?
No, I didn't. I wasn't in 12. Stannard's been part of the three. He's the only ridden three as well, so he's got 100% record, so that's not really fair. But no, it's just incredible, really. You never get old. You enjoy it just as much every time, and it's just a really special feeling.
I mean, from the outside, it's been a dominant performance by Chris and by the team. Has it been the most dominant team that you've been part of?
Yeah, most definitely. I think... Just the caliber of riders we got, you know, five of us climbers who can all lead really strong World Tour lineups in our own right, and the fact we all come together and there was no egos, or, you know, we all committed to the one cause and communicated really well. I think that's what made us really strong, and, you know, because you can get there's a lot of other teams with a lot of strong individuals, but to have that one common goal and all pull together in the same direction every day as well, you know, every day we got on the bike, it was about what's best for Froome and everyone doing what's best for him. So, and that's why we were so dominant, I think.
Well, I mean, people watching it saying, oh, Team Sky are too dominant, you know, what can we do to make it a leveler playing field? I guess that doesn't bother you at all, does it?
Not one bit. I said on ITV just now, you know, if they pay me to entertain, I'll entertain, but they pay me to win the bike race and do my job for the team, so that's what we'll do, and that's the best way that we can win is riding how we did, and, you know, whether that seems boring to other people is don't really care less, but it might seem boring, but it's certainly not easy, and it takes a lot of hard work, and it doesn't just happen either, you know, it takes since November really, you know, all the training and, like I say, the pulling together in the same direction to make it all happen.
I mean, finally, you personally had a real breakthrough last year at the Tour when it looked like, you know, you might be emerging as a GC rider yourself. This year, not quite the same for you from a personal point of view. What wasn't quite clicking this year, and do you think, you know, you can come back next year and fulfill that potential?
Yeah, definitely. I think you know, the build up this year wasn't ideal, and I learned a lot there, and that's the main thing really where I learned. And then obviously in the race I had a big crash on the first day and really hurt my ribs, and that, you know, they're still sore now when I go to bed, but they're okay on the bike. So all that sort of added up, and you know, I was 15th last year and 15th this year, but you know, I'm kind of disappointed personally this year and over the moon last year. So, you know, I think certainly learned a lot, and when it comes to next year, I'd certainly be a lot better.
So that was Geraint Thomas, Lionel. A little bit disappointed on a personal level, I think, but hasn't ruled out coming back and being that sort of number two to Chris Froome or whoever happens to be leading Team Sky, and getting a, you know, high overall placing for himself. Who did you speak to?
Well, another man who will be hoping to come back to the Tour de France and put into practice everything he's learned this month, Dan McClay, British rider with Fortuneo Vital Concept. Was hoping for a bit of a better result today, but I think as they went round this top corner here, his back wheel took a heck of a bounce, or you know, he's knocked off his stride a bit, so a little bit further down than he had hoped. But here is Dan McClay, who's completed his first tour.
Dan, you finished the Tour de France. How did it feel?
Pretty hard, if I'm honest. No, the first week passed okay, and then got pretty tired in the back end of the second week, and then felt a bit better yesterday, to be honest, and then thought I'd have a good pop today, but in the end I was just a bit badly placed and didn't pan out. But yeah, I think the legs are pretty empty from all the mountains and so on. Yeah.
Tim Harris showed me a bit of footage that he'd taken of you going round, I think, the top corner there, and your back wheel appeared to slip out. Was that you?
I don't know whether that was me or the guy behind, but I'm not really sure. Yeah, I lost my chain 5 times on the last lap there on the cobbles, but yeah, it's a bit of a crazy one down that back straight, you know, like so fast, a little bit downhill and so bumpy as well.
But you've seen a bit of everything, haven't you? A string of top 10 places and then off the back in front of the broom wagon, you've seen both ends of the Tour de France.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think at one point I've ever been first, but yeah, it's obviously highs and lows, but you always expect to suffer in the mountains, maybe not as much as I did, but until you've done it, you don't know how your legs are going to be in week 3, so yeah.
Is it a very lonely place when it's just you and the broom wagon and you know that the gruppetto is ahead of you? Were you worrying about the time cut that day?
The second time I was out back fully by myself, I was didn't think I was going to make it. I mean, I wasn't worried, you know, because what can you do? You just press on and see what happens. But then we're getting closer to the finish and it seemed more and more likely. And then I had a little crash on the downhill, and then I was like, oh. But, you know, I didn't really lose any time there. It was like a slow corner and everything. So you're going to have a day like that every now and again.
You made a new friend, I guess, because when you got to the finish, you said to the driver of the broom wagon, Adam Aoun, and yet you weren't off the back on your own yesterday.
No, yesterday I felt a bit better, but I think that was maybe with it being quite cool, you know. Definitely suffering the heat when it's climbing and stuff, you know. I think when you're going up mountains and you already can't climb, it takes its toll, you know.
Is there a little band of brothers in that gruppetto, guys that you see every day, you know, are going through the same thing?
Yeah, for sure the gruppetto is a bit more friendly with each other than the rest of the race, you know. We all like to have a good go at the climbers when they get back there and press on too hard. And then you got the next band of brothers who are the guys chasing the gruppetto, and I think they get a bit of respect for each other by the end of the race, so yeah.
And lastly, regarding the sprints, you up there mixing it with the best in the world. What did you learn from this Tour de France that you can take forward?
I think just confidence, you know. Like, I think there's no major lessons. You learn a few little things, like, but in general, I think it's confidence.
Well, Lionel, good news.
What's that?
I went back for a final try to get Sam Bennett, last man in the Tour, Lantern Rouge, see if he was back from doping control, and he was.
Oh, good. Did he shake his hands? Has he washed his hands? These are the crucial... Oh, dear.
I didn't shake his hand because his hand is heavily bandaged and I don't want to damage the finger that he's going to possibly have operated on this week. Anyway, I did have a quick chat with him. Here is Sam Bennett, the Lantern Rouge. You've made it. You're a Tour de France finisher.
Yeah. Yes. I'm positive anyway.
you must be... You were up there today on the stage. Well, you happy to be up there competitive on the last day?
Yeah, I did everything I could. Maybe not as aggressive as should have been the last corner, but yeah, it was really hard, and the cobbles were so rough in the hand, and yeah, just did everything I could.
What did it feel, you know, coming in this final stage? A lot of riders, first time they ride the Tour, there's a huge sort of moment when you first see the Champs-Élysées.
It's amazing. I just wish it lasted longer, and the moment was gone before I knew it. Like, and it just went so quick. I wish it lasted longer.
So, you know, you said you wanted to feel like a proper bike rider by finishing the Tour. Is that what you feel now?
Yeah, but I'm a bad proper bike rider. I'm last. And I was told this morning that this is the most amount of riders I've ever finished a Tour on record. So I'm the person that has been most last in any Tour de France.
You're being too hard on yourself.
You can't get more last than me.
Yeah, but you're being too hard on yourself. You're riding with a very badly hurt finger, and I think you're off to Germany tomorrow to have that looked at, aren't you?
Yeah, I go to Germany tomorrow, and there's an operation booked Wednesday, and we have to see if I need it or not. So,
good luck, Sam.
Hey, thank you.
Cheers, and well done.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Download our special weekly podcast digest, exclusive for Rafa Cycling Club members, celebrating road racing and keeping you at the heart of the sport. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much to Rafa, who have been wonderful sponsors to us here at the Tour de France. And we're delighted that Rafa are going to be sponsoring the Cycling Podcast and the Cycling Podcast Femina for the rest of 2016. So that's great news. Thank you very much indeed to them. We're going to go through our thank yous, but it's been a wonderful tour, hasn't it, Lionel?
Yeah, it has. I mean, it's a three-week adventure, and it's drawn to a close, and I feel a bit sad about that. Always look forward to getting to Paris, and then when it's over, bit of a slightly deflating feeling, back to kind of normality tomorrow.
Indeed, but it's been a great experience, and we want to thank all the people who have made it possible. We're extremely grateful to, as I mentioned, Rafa already, and at Rafa in particular, Simon Mottram, Sarah Clark, Charlie Cooper, and James Fairbank. Thank you very much indeed to them. Thanks to Eurosport as well, and in particular Rachel Frank at Eurosport. And thanks to Niederberg and Oliver Stewart for sponsoring our daily Kilometre Zero shows.
Thanks very much also to our team of producers, without whom we wouldn't be able to put together these episodes. They work to a very tight deadline every day, and they are Alex Adey, Adam Bowie, John Mooney, Jonathan Rowe, Paul Scoynes, and Tom Wally.
We've also been incredibly lucky to have some fantastic guests on the tour this year. Our regular amigo Daniel Freib has been joining us from time to time, but we've had more than adequate stand-ins, and they've been fantastic. Thank you very much indeed to Kayleigh Fretz, Dan Hackenberg, Andy Hood, Seb Piquet, Giro Scognamiglio, and Francois Tomaso.
And there are a few more people in the back room that have helped us out. Our music in the regular episodes and Kilometre Zero has been provided by Santaray and 13 Senses. The newsletters that have been sent out to anyone who signed up to receive them have been put together by Nick Christian and Jonathan Rowe. Simon Gill has provided fantastic photography for us. Jonathan Rowe has run our social media. And Greg Troman and Rafa have looked after our graphics and visual identity.
Also, thanks to Tom Carey, who's been a wonderful travelling partner for us. He is the cycling correspondent at The Telegraph. Thanks to Leos Bikes, who gave us two... Lionel punches there. Who gave us two beautiful nano carbon folding bikes, which were both very useful and practical and also great fun. Thanks very much to Chris and Miranda Cole at Chalet La Gieta for providing us with great accommodation and putting on our Cycling Podcast live event, which was great fun. Thanks to Paul Shafto, who helps us with sponsorship. Thanks to ASO. And a huge thank you, of course, to all our listeners. Thank you very much. And you've followed us here as you followed us at the Giro and the Tour the last few years. We're building on what we're doing all the time. We'll do something at the Vuelta that we'll confirm in the next few weeks. We're not quite sure exactly what that will be yet, but we'll certainly be doing something. We think we're Grand Tour podcasters, aren't we, Lionel?
I think you are. I'm more of a week-long stage race podcaster, me. I crack in the middle week and then sort of rally towards the end. Same every time.
We're just reminiscing, though, weren't we, about the wonderful adventure we've been on, starting up there in Normandy And we've had some, you know, great moments this tour, some terrible ones as well, mainly in Andorra. We won't be going back there in a hurry. There was the evening in the old chateau where we were provided with some Niederberg wine by our sponsor, and Madame provided us with a small decanter of wine, and at one point we sneaked a bottle in through the window to top up our decanter. That was an interesting sort of very British moment. We were doing a reverse stealing.
Yeah, well, she came in to see how we were getting on with the food and the wine and must have been really puzzled that the decanter was fuller than when she'd last left the room. I mean, what were we doing? But there we are. That was a memorable moment. There have been so many memorable moments, haven't there, really? I mean,
there was always are. You were going through the hotel list there, and it does conjure up all these great memories that you forget the next day, but then you look back and they all come flooding back. And, you know, the podcast stand is an audio record of this Tour de France, hopefully. Anyway, let's wrap things up, shall we, Lionel? It's farewell from Paris and farewell from the 2016 Tour de France.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? But we'll get the Eurostar home tomorrow and we'll miss being here by about tomorrow afternoon. Although, we'll be back again next year, but see what we can conjure up for the Welter, shall we?
Cheer up, Lionel. It'll come round again sometime soon.
Yeah.
Cheerio.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Lionel.